are going to introduce ourselves this time.
Yes.
Oh, have we actually started?
Okay. Let's.
Welcome to the Film Experience Podcast. I'm Nathaniel.
I'm Joe Reed of lowresolution.blogspot.com.
I'm Nick Davis of Nick's Book Picks.
And I'm Katie Rich of Cinema Blend.
Katie's the easiest one to tell apart.
I have that going for me.
Well, you're just back from Sundance. Welcome back.
Thank you. I'm going to be coughing from time to time as a result of Sundance. So,
Sundance was contagious this year?
Oh, my God. So I there was just this turning point where everyone you know was sick, and there was nothing you could do about it. And there's just, you can't stop what's coming. Everyone is sick, and you're going to
And then you all piled onto an airplane leaving. So I'm sure
I know. So we all brought it back to you.
Oh, thank you. So what was your favorite Sundance movie? I need new movies. I've been so mired in everything from 2000. I'm just like, give me new stuff. I need new ideas.
Yeah. And then I got back in the three movies that I said, I don't even know which ones I'm allowed to talk to, but I saw Sanctum, I Am Number Four, and Romeo and Juliet. Those are the three movies I saw in my week after Sundance.
And you're like, 2011, it's terrible.
It was such a come down from Sundance.
So tell us your five best pictures from Sundance.
Well, I feel like the disclaimer I need to say is there's very little Oscar-y stuff in there. There's so little. You know, there's not a Little Miss Sunshine. There's not a Kids Are All Right. I don't even think there's a Winter's Bone in there. It's going to be a really interesting year because a lot of stuff got bought. You're going to be seeing a lot of these movies, but I have no idea how many of them are going to hit with a wide audience.
Yeah.
And I think the best movie I saw there was Take Shelter, which is Michael Shannon and Jessica Chastain, which I think is going to be a prime example because it's a very strange movie. And yeah. Even when I walked out of it, I wasn't really sure that I liked it. And then it just grew on me the more that I thought about it. And
yeah.
That was kind of a big consensus hit.
Reading about that one sounded like, oh, so this is Michael Shannon doing the Michael Shannon-iest movie of all of them yet.
Although
doesn't he make all of his movies Michael Shannon-iest?
It's true.
Yeah, that is true.
He's never less than 100% Michael Shannon in any of his movies. Although the thing that I really like about it is he's very, like, you know, you think of Michael Shannon being like, I'm yelling and I'm Michael Shannon and I'm so crazy.
Yes, I do.
And in this, he's like very quiet, very slow burn. Like he's this... You know, he's much more average. He's very believable as this average Midwestern husband.
Yeah.
And then he kind of loses it as the film goes on, but in this very slow and, like, unshowy way, which is what I think is really amazing about his performance. So
yeah.
So allow yourself to be surprised by that one, because I think he's really great in it.
So it'll be a big year for Jessica Chastain, maybe, then,
oh my
since
God,
she's in Tree of Life?
Yeah, and she's also in Help, and she's got a great part in that, too. So, yeah, Jessica Chastain, watch out for her.
Okay, what's your number two?
Well, to talk about the one commercial thing, Project NIMH by James Marsh, who made Man on Wire. It's about the this group of scientists in the 70s who taught a chimp sign language and basically taught it to think of itself as human and then abandoned it because they didn't know what else to do when it got big. It's really amazing. It's going to be on HBO, but it's also going to have theatrical run, so it is Oscar eligible. And that's probably going to be sometime in the spring. So, yeah, please see that. It's really great.
I hear Project NIMH and I think of mice having to relocate in a field.
Well, it's animals.
The secret of Project NIMH.
I must tell you about NIMH. Look there.
It's the most beautiful sight I've ever seen.
I hear James Marsh, and I think of Katie's pretty awesome interview with James Marsh, where he airs some opinions about some people, but we don't have to get to that.
Because I did not prompt him at all, and he just kind of let loose, and I was just kind of sitting there stunned.
You guys will have to see our site to know what we're talking about.
CinemaBlend.com.
Yes. Then there's Martha Marcy May Marlene, which I assume you guys have been hearing about too.
I'm kind of super psyched for that one.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
The cast sounds amazing.
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And then Elizabeth Olsen being the star who nobody had heard of before Sundance, it just
right.
blew up. Like, she was the only person anybody could talk about after a while. Two more real quick, if I can think of them. Page One, the documentary about the New York Times, I thought was really great.
Right.
And then Vera Farmiga's movie, Higher Ground, which I think
that,
I loved.
Yeah.
I think I loved it more than a lot of people, but I really loved it. And I think it's great. I think she's really talented. She's great in it. So look out for that.
So you thought her direction was strong, too?
Yeah. It's not a perfect movie, and it's not... You know, I'm not saying, oh, look out for her as the better directing talent than actress. You know, that'd be really hard to do because she's a great actress.
Yeah, right.
But it's really well put together and really, like, kind to its characters and thoughtful. And I really, really enjoyed it.
And her sister plays her, right?
Yeah, she has a teenage sister, which is crazy because she's like, you know, she's in her 30s.
Right.
But, you know, they look a lot alike. And it's this great thing where the person playing the younger version of the character looks just like the character.
What did you think of Like Crazy? Because I think that's the one that won the
jury prize, and it got picked up by Paramount, which is, you know, the big sale. I thought it was good.
It seems like it has the potential to be really like indie by numbers.
Yeah, it's actually, I would say it's more like Blue Valentine than 500 Days of Summer, which is, you know, that's a weird, you know,
sure, yes,
put it into a box, but it's kind of dark like Blue Valentine. It's got that, like, that time, not really a scattered timeline, but you follow the course of a relationship. But it's about 20-year-olds, so it doesn't kind of have that punch of Blue Valentine where you really watch these people fall apart.
Right.
I don't know. I think it hits with a lot of people. I think it worked for me for a while and then kind of lost it. But I'll be interested to see if Paramount can turn it into like a big studio hit, because it's still a small improvised indie movie.
Yeah, I have to say I was kind of surprised at all the Felicity Jones buzz, because I, you know, having seen The Tempest, I was just...
That is so unfair to hold against somebody.
And maybe. But if she's really a great actress in disguise, then Julie Taymor's direction on The Tempest is even worse than I thought.
I mean, even Helen Mirren isn't that good in The Tempest. So you kind of get a...
Even Sam Howell isn't that good in The Tempest.
That's true.
I shouldn't even say, since I haven't seen it, I'm a punk.
You've seen production stills. You know what's going on.
Fair enough.
Yeah,
I like that we're the only people talking about The Tempest at this point. Like, everyone else happened.
It even opened, and it's like it didn't open.
Yeah,
I know.
In Chicago, it opened at 1:00, at 9:30 at one theater for 2 weeks. That was it. It was amazing.
Ouch!
And they stopped running the movie halfway through every time they started it.
That's right. It was like your adventure. If you wish you were at Old Dog.
Or... And you didn't go see it when they made it so easy for you?
I'm sure. Isn't that weird?
Awkward transition. Time to talk Oscar. I've noticed this strange thing this year where the conversation shifted really quickly. It's almost like everybody's ideas about what might win or what might be nominated were so set in stone that the only thing people can talk about are the things that sort of made them shift what they were thinking. Like the nomination tally for The King's Speech, for example. And I was wondering if you guys think this year was particularly bad in terms of people assuming everything before anything had actually happened. Or do you think that's par for the course?
I feel like it's just been moving in this direction where the nominations have just become really easy to call, that those few sort of shockers do kind of stand out a little more. I don't know. I just feel like nomination morning didn't really change a whole lot. I guess because I was already thinking The King's Speech. I think the one surprise I think we talked about before the podcast was like Waiting for Superman and Best Documentary. But that's fairly far down the list in terms of categories. But that was the one, like, true shocker, where it did seem like there was a definite front runner that didn't show up.
Did you see The King's Speech coming to the extent? I mean, I think the nominations didn't surprise me on The King's Speech, but the DGA and PGA wins for it did surprise me. That, I mean, especially Tom Hooper winning the DGA. I think
the DGA was the one that surprised me.
PGA is not always easy to predict, so that didn't surprise me that much. But Director's Guild was a shocker.
Yeah, and I expected The King's Speech to have more nominations, but I still kind of thought The Social Network was the front runner. I mean, we wanted to get into Hooper and Fincher later, but I still feel like that's a little bit misleading when it comes to the Oscars. Mm-hmm.
Well, let's actually talk about Best Director, because I don't think I know all of your opinions. Like, who do we think is deserving?
Of those five?
Yeah, of those five, what would your choice be, Nick?
Russell.
And why?
Probably. Just because everything that I love about The Fighter, which is a lot of things, has to do with what comes to it with directing. I mean, getting all those different acting styles to not only mesh, but not make them mesh by homogenizing them so they're all a little more like each other. But he actually, I think he does this in a lot of his movies, but he pushes people to be even more the kind of actor they often are and still makes that cohesive and really thrives off the heterogeneity of all of them. And the frame is really exciting, and getting to make your own choices about who you're looking at and kind of write your own story based on where your eye goes is like the anti-Aronofsky, and I really like that, and I think it's great.
Yeah,
but I think category is pretty strong, I have to say.
Yeah, that's a really good feeling to look at that lineup of all these directors who've never been nominated before, who, you know, Aronofsky, Russell, and Fincher kind of being this of the same class of up-and-comers.
So, Katie, who would your choice be among that group?
I'd probably stick with Fincher. I really love The Social Network, and I'd been kind of into the narrative of him getting his reward this year, and both his body of work and what he did with The Social Network, I feel like is pretty undeniable, and what he put together there, especially if he's going to go make The Dragon Tattoo. Like, now's the time. Reward him for making this original thing.
And Joe?
Yeah, I would say either Russell, for all the reasons that that Nick articulated, or Aronofsky. I feel a little bit like the backlash against Black Swan is making me feel like I should watch it again and reevaluate, because I came away with such a passionate love for it on an emotional level that I'm wondering if maybe I'm just secretly a dummy and missing some things. But every time I think about it, I think of more things that I loved about it. So Fincher, I would like to see more than Hooper just because of his body of work. And I've liked almost everything from him, at least from like Zodiac on before. Mm-hmm. But in terms of if I had a ballot to cast, I think I would probably still cast it for Aronofsky.
Mine would go to Fincher, but I do have to say that Russell would be a very close second. I love Russell's movies, and he doesn't get as much credit for being like an auteur. I think because his movies aren't as sober as other people's.
Yeah.
You know, they're always a little bit eccentric, and the humor's always, you know, there in odd
genre-wise, they're so diverse. There's so many different that it's tough to get a cohesive style that way.
Yeah, but he definitely has a sure. style.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, in terms of perception.
Exactly. But I mean, I think with Fincher, in terms of The Social Network is one of those movies, and I kind of liken it to, and this is going to be a really weird comparison, but A History of Violence, in that it feels like this machine where everything has been oiled and greased, and it just churning along, and everything across the board works for this one vision. And so I view the director as this like master craftsman type of thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah, yeah. And Fincher gives you that feeling on Zodiac, I think, works the same way, where you feel everything moving along the way that he wanted it to. And, it's because he's such a control freak, but it works.
But it doesn't feel like sealed off to me either.
No,
I know, Nick,
no.
You think it does a little bit, right?
A little bit, yeah. But, in some ways it kind of helped the piece. But not in every way do I think it helps the piece. But
so what do we think about Tom Hooper winning versus David Fincher?
So nobody thinks Christopher Nolan's going to win?
That was a good excuse for your Inception button. That was nice.
I hit the Inception button every day, you guys.
That's my alarm snooze.
So do any of you buy the argument that Hooper will win Best Director too?
I certainly think he can. At this point, I would probably put it at a 50-50. I think when a movie seems to be as strong a contender for Best Picture as The King's Speech does now, I think it's kind of foolish to think that the director doesn't have at least a 50-50 shot.
That's fair.
People are comparing it a lot to the Chicago and The Pianist.
Right.
But I don't really think that's equivalent because
I don't.
Chicago's a musical.
You know what it reminds me of?
People tend to not, for some reason, not respect directors of musicals.
Yeah.
And The King's Speech is definitely not a musical. Although I think it would be a great musical.
It reminds me a little bit of when we all thought The Aviator was the front runner, and then Million Dollar Baby kept creeping up, and then we were all like, well, Million Dollar Baby could win Best Picture, but Scorsese's definitely going to still win Best Director, and it's going to be a split. Even to the point when they announced Eastwood as Best Director, I was like, oh, so then The Aviator's going to win Best Picture, because it's clearly going to be a split. And I never quite allowed myself to be like, oh no, they just really like Million Dollar Baby, they're really just going to give it everything. And I think that might be the case with The King's Speech.
But I do think Tom Hooper is not Clint Eastwood, right? Like,
yeah,
just in terms,
true, very true,
sort of mass fealty. And I know that people have been saying that nor is David Fincher revered in Hollywood in the way that Roman Polanski is, but I would also point out David Fincher is not like, a hunted felon or whatever.
I do think that's been overblown, the idea that, well, Fincher hasn't campaigned well. He said a couple things that have sort of thrown some cold water on the idea of a fervent Oscar campaign, where he's just been sort of frank and...
I don't think this is my best movie.
Taking the long view of his career, but I feel like none of it's come across to me as hostile.
I don't think so either. I think to some degree, people don't hold it against serious directors if they aren't sort of effusive about, oh my God, you love me. Whereas they do with certain types of actors.
Yeah. I think they hold it against directors when they make you do 60 takes of walking up the stairs. Like, that's the kind of thing that I think can make people just have a bad taste in their mouth about you. Yeah. I honestly think that's a bigger problem for him than his, you know, sort of Monique, screw this, I'm not doing it. Love imagining him and Monique having breakfast together, being like, I don't care either, baby.
maybe he should direct the Hattie McDaniel biopic.
There we go. We're making connections here.
That would be a better thing than just doing remakes and franchises.
Well, yeah.
Which is where he's heading now.
See producer credit if that actually happens. It started here on the podcast. The girl with the gardenia in her hair.
Isn't it crazy how many of the best director nominees are moving on to a remake or a franchise? Like Russell's doing the Uncharted movie, and Aronofsky's doing Wolverine, and Nolan's got his... Oh, no, God, I keep saying Nolan's being nominated.
Make everybody sadder.
I know. But still, it's like so permeated everything that even all the best director nominees have to... I mean, I guess the Coens still do whatever they want to do. Anyway.
Aronofsky took Wolverine before Black Swan premiered, well before it premiered, so I wonder if seeing how much money Black Swan made and seeing what a success it was... if he would have still felt the need to do something so much like a cash-in.
Yeah.
Because making whatever, $130 million on Black Swan clearly was going to give him enough juice to be able to do another weirdo Aronofsky project.
I loved what he said about being at the Golden Globes, that every single person who turned down Black Swan came up to him and asked, hey, so is there anything we can help you make?
I have a question. Does anybody... think that David O. Russell's finally going to be able to get nailed, finished, or released?
Didn't he give up on it?
But now that he's had this big success, you'd think somebody would be like, well, it's almost done, right?
You would think, but I haven't heard a peep about that, which is kind of strange. Yeah, that he's now a Best Director nominee, and he's got this movie with Jake Gyllenhaal in it that's on the shelf. It's not like it's...
It's at least a curio, you know?
Right, totally.
Release it in New York and L.A.
Yeah.
Literally, I've heard talk about this is Kirstie Alley on her Twitter, do not judge me, who's in the movie, and nomination morning said, oh great, now Nailed will come out. And for Kirstie Alley to think that makes me think it's probably not realistic.
Is she in Nailed?
She is in Nailed, yeah.
Wow. Yeah, someday there will be like a midnight screening of Nailed with, you know, it'll be like this weird cult movie.
Yeah.
And they'll
see
whatever's there, and they'll animate the missing scenes or something.
It'll be like A Star Is Born where they'll just show stills. In between where they lost the footage.
It'll be our own Magnificent Ambersons. Nailed. So how you like me now? How you like me now? How you like me now? How you like me now?
How you like me now? How you like me now? So in terms of people wanting it versus not wanting it, since we were just talking about Fincher. How do you guys feel about Melissa Leo? Do you think she wants it too much or just the right amount for the Oscar voters?
I feel like just the right amount wouldn't have included these really tacky ads that she's putting out for herself.
It feels a little too much like the infamous Color Purple ads.
Yeah, or like Sally Kirkland, it feels like to me more than anything, is just this increasingly batty seeming lady who's just sort of, especially with a co-star in the category with her, to me that makes it seem even worse.
Oh, that's
it makes
true.
It seem even more crass.
I have loved her acceptance speeches, but I think they probably are more influenced by the way people present themselves on the stage at ceremonies than about what they see in magazines.
But this is going to start a whole conversation, and it's not going to be good for her.
Kind of think it comes down to how many people watch their Animal Kingdom screeners. I sort of do. Like,
yeah.
And I mean, I don't know how much vote splitting is a factor. Like, I don't know if there are as many Amy Adams fans or enough you know, if there's enough division in the fighter ranks to make that a problem. But I think there may be other reasons that she could lose. But I mean, I just find the ad, I hadn't seen the ads until you asked us to look at them 5 minutes before we started this. And they, I find them sort of hilarious. Like, they're kind of like perfume ads for Melissa.
Yes.
At least they're not called insolence, like Hillary Swank's perfume.
I kind of wish they were. Thespia.
They could be her in character from The Fighter and just be called Alice.
Oh, that would be kind of cool, actually.
That would be funny.
Although that is what the infamous Color Purple ad was. It was as the character.
Yeah. Well, it was actually as Whoopi's character. Like, that dialect in writing letters to God is what Seeley does in the whole book, but right. Not Ugh, which was why people found that slightly confusing.
Maybe she hoped people would confuse her for Whoopi Goldberg.
Did anybody watch the Color Purple reunion on Oprah a couple months ago?
She's been so reunion crazy lately.
Seriously. Like, Margaret Avery still seemed crazy, and it really did seem like that was the first time that Whoopi and Oprah had spoken since, like, the Color Purple wrapped, where they have this whole conversation about just, like, people think we're in a fight, which is so weird. It's like, yeah, it's so weird, because right now it looks like you two are on the opposite sides of the planet, and you're talking to each other 2 feet away. Like, it was just such a weird vibe between them. Oh, and Ray Dong Chong showed up in full-on, like, I want my career back mode, where she was just like, I'm gonna impress somebody in the 15 minutes that I have here. Anyway.
Has she done the Nailed reunion yet?
That's for us to put together.
Which one of the Best Picture nominees will we be seeing a reunion special for in 30 years?
That's a good one.
What do you think?
Clearly the 127 hours cast, because you can't make fun of them without thinking of all the others, right?
And then you have to have something with all the women. And the only Best Picture nominee with any substantial amount of women is probably The Fighter.
Black Swan.
All right, fine. I was stuck thinking about all the Best Director nominees. I was like, there are no other movies.
That's true. The Best Director nominees, except for Black Swan, really did hedge Dude.
Maybe The Fighter would be the one, because it's got all these stars that have different sort of fame, but all have it.
Well, but I'd want to only see it for the sisters. That's why I would watch it.
Totally.
I was so pleased that Melissa Leo had them there at SAG.
Yeah, God, yeah. I was watching that too. It was amazing. They were all standing there talking about how much prettier they are than they are in the movie. And they were so great. And then Melissa Leo, like, turns a corner and, like, it's like telling them all to stand up straight. It was so weird. She really might just be kind of nuts.
Maybe Melissa Leo?
Yeah.
Isn't that true of actors in general, though?
I think it is. I think maybe Melissa Leo hasn't learned to keep it under wraps as well. This particular stunt feels tacky, and I'm kind of hoping maybe this is what it takes for Amy Adams to play the spoiler and win that award.
Oh,
Jackie Weaver. I mean, I love Jackie Weaver too, but I
or
think
Haley Steinfeld. even if you don't want her to win, don't you feel like that's a distinct possibility?
I do.
Oh, I do. Yes, I do.
I really loved her in True Grit. I'm maybe the biggest True Grit fan here, but I'd be totally happy. I mean, I don't know. I would much rather see Amy Adams have an Oscar, but I really love True Grit. And why isn't Matt Damon nominated? Damn it.
He used up that default nomination last year.
No, that's what bugs me so much. He was nominated for this and not for this. I know.
Although, if you get left out of a roster, it may as well be supporting actor this year, right?
Thank you.
Such a good lineup.
Yeah.
It is
maybe
never
the best in my lifetime. Yeah, it's fantastic.
The people who are in there and the performances are nominated.
Yes. Even Jeffrey Rush, who is an actor I don't normally like, it's probably the best I've liked Jeffrey Rush maybe ever in a movie.
Oh, me too.
I guess the only thing you could complain about is maybe he deserves to be credited as a co-lead, but, you know, that's in terms of category fraud, that's pretty mild.
I think it is. I think, and same with Bale.
Although, Nathaniel, you counted him as lead in your...
I did. I have a weird thing about when a story is primarily about a relationship, which is about the brothers, and it begins and ends with an actor, that's a lead to me. It literally begins with Christian Bale and ends with Christian Bale.
I just feel like the thrust of that narrative was Bale's character supporting Wahlberg.
Right, but I think the verb to support gets confused with being a supporting actor.
It's borderline, but that's where I come down.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not adamant about it or anything. I'll be totally... It's not one of these things I want to complain about, like, Hattie. Or Hattie. I'm mixing Haley with Maddie.
Can I ask a big question? Scott, we were talking about Melissa Leo, like, coming into the thick of the thing, and it's, what, 2 weeks until they have to turn in ballots, or a week and a half, something like that? Like, do you see any other, I mean, aside from the whole whether the King's Speech gaining strength, do you see any other, like, big narratives to keep an eye on, and, like, things that might shift in the next couple weeks? Because it seems so set in stone.
I think the only area where something weird might happen is supporting actress.
Yeah.
I wonder about how many the King's Speech is going to take just because they like it.
Yeah.
Like, if it takes something like sound mixing earlier, you know it's going to win.
Don't even say that.
What?
That is so awful.
Right, or editing, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, that would be so weird.
I just can't bear the thought of Social Network losing editing, of all things.
Yeah.
Because it's just, the pacing in that movie is just so incredible.
The real bummer is going to be when it wins cinematography.
No, you think that's going to happen?
I think it very well could happen. I'm probably not going to predict.
What was that, Nick?
Potential of reality right now. This is a dream. I know.
Hit the button again. Hit the button again.
I need to go kick.
We're going to see Nick falling in slow motion during this whole podcast.
You guys are totally all shooting at me on an ice planet right now.
I've also been thinking about King's Speech winning score, which would also would bum me out similarly.
I mean, I think that one is more probable just because I think they're ready to honor Desplat.
I think True Grit has definitely got cinematography, at least.
I really hope so. Do you think How to Train Your Dragon could win Best Score?
I was just going to say, do we think that has even a little bit of a shot to win Best Animated? Because I feel like That's something that I'm hearing more and more, and it's not, obviously, I don't truck in Oscar voter circles, but I think now that it's on DVD, there's a lot more people picking it up and being like, oh, wow, this is really good. Where did this come from?
Right, but I personally think that Toy Story will take it in a cakewalk, but I do think it's going to be more difficult after this year for Pixar to constantly win.
I was going to say, it's kind of stopped at some point, right?
No, because I think people are going to feel like this... It's part of the narrative of Toy Story 3, too, right? The Toy Story is Pixar, because that's how they started.
Mm-hmm.
And so that this is, like, the sort of grand culmination. And I actually think that...
And it all ends with Cars 2.
Yeah,
I think
2 is not going to help.
I think the drop-off is going to happen. And you know how important narrative is for Oscar races.
Yes.
I really doubt we'll have an animated film in the Best Picture in the next couple of years.
I mean, you don't think DreamWorks could take the spot?
I think it's a narrative. I mean, I'm just guessing, but that's what I feel, that animated films are not going to die off, because obviously they're the most popular type of movie right now. But
yeah,
it's about an animated film about the British royalty.
Only if it's a musical.
Here's a Sophie's Choice for you guys, though, because we were all sort of dreading Alice in Wonderland winning Best Art Direction before the nominations. And I think the nominations kind of put some cold water on.
Yes.
Would we rather see that win Art Direction or the King's Speech? Because I feel like it's one or the other.
I would totally be okay with the King's Speech winning Art Direction.
Yeah, me too.
I think that's the best element of the movie, actually.
Huh.
The wall?
Yeah, just I love how, you know, crazy specific that set is. And I know the movie feels kind of like a stage play in a lot of ways. But, you know, if you're going to feel like a stage play, have a great set.
Yeah. It would be nice to see Inception contend at all, though, because there's some really gorgeous sets in there. Do you think Inception's going to win anything?
It'll win the sound thing. It'll win visual effects.
It'll win visual effects. That's right.
It'll win the Jurassic Park Awards.
I still think, actually, score is the most up in the air.
Yeah, I could definitely see it winning score. I kind of am almost hoping it does.
Well, it's just iconic. Like, it, you know, the Inception button, like that.
Yes.
That score is, of all of them, the one that people will remember.
I absolutely agree.
Yeah. Wait, what's that?
I love the Inception.
The sound mixing on this podcast is not good.
No, we will not be able to beat Inception.
I will not, yeah, I'll never be nominated for an Oscar for sound mixing. Although I do experiment with the levels sometimes.
Ooh.
But is that sound editing or sound mixing that you do, Nathaniel?
I get confused at which is which.
Yeah, this is the point in the podcast every year where Nick has to go and throw around that he knows the difference between sound mixing and sound editing and makes me feel inferior.
It's what I totally know. You guys have no idea how much I know that difference.
Oh, but speaking of knowing technical things, if you haven't watched it yet, I highly recommend to every reader the extras on the Social Network disc.
Aww.
If you haven't.
Do I have to?
I feel like I learned so much. Like, and I've read several books on editing and stuff, but I even watching those, I felt like I learned a lot about the filmmaking process. I mean, I saw a piece on the editing, which was super interesting, because they literally showed you like 15 different takes of like Eisenberg's performance, and you could see every time he shifted any line reading.
Wow.
Like all back to back, they would just play on a loop, and you're like, oh my God, so many choices.
So that's where you fall for the editing, I can see. I mean, that's a really shrewd move for them.
I already was rooting for it in editing, but yeah. I just thought that was so interesting to see what they actually could choose from, because it's such an invisible art form.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we never know what they're actually,
right,
what the choices they're making are.
Can I, talking about Social Network winning editing, is there anything that it would win early in the night that you think might suggest it could win Best Picture?
That, certainly. Editing would certainly be a good bellwether for that.
Because I feel like it could win editing and still the King's Speech would be just fine. I think because the editing is so remarkable.
Right, but if we're talking about Good Omens, I think that's as good an omen.
Think the Good Omens would be sound mixing or score.
It'd be great.
Better than editing?
Yeah, because the editing is so... You know, even though everyone in the Academy can vote on the craft categories in terms of winners, and they might not know that much about editing, I think everybody understands that editing is one of the key factors in pacing in movies and how, you know, rhythmic they play.
I mean, I think if it won something like cinematography, something shocking like that, then certainly I would sit up and take notice.
I literally wouldn't trust anything until they opened the Best Picture envelope. I mean, after the sort of traffic, like director, screenplay, acting prize, you know, like,
yeah,
still goes to Gladiator. Like, I kind of think it's done.
For the King's Speech.
I do hope, I do hope it picks up several prizes, but a lot of those, it seems, I can't imagine it winning sound or cinematography, or I hope it gets the score.
Mm-hmm. I'd be happy with technical nomination or wins, certainly more so than the screenplay. That's the one I'm really hoping it does get upset in. That's the one it seems like it's still going to win. But I would be kind of thrilled if something like Winter's Bone or Toy Story 3 were able to jump up and take it.
We have the resident Social Network hater.
Yeah, sorry.
Aaron Sorkin will.
You can only love or hate.
Yeah, well, that's true. Joe, are you a member of SAG or something? Because they gave it the cold shoulder.
They reviled the Social Network. They tested it.
I actually, can I admit, I didn't watch the SAG Awards, so I didn't see that moment that everybody's talking about, but I heard that there was like microphone issues that maybe the audience didn't know that they were back on the air or something like that. I don't know. I heard some...
We'll never know. If you could vote against something, like you can in Best Song.
Wait, you can vote against something in Best Song?
Right, because Best Song goes by scores, and they score each... contender.
Oh, really?
At the nomination level.
At the nomination level. So you can totally sabotage something you hate.
Yeah.
Because you can give it like a 1 on a scale of 10. And that's the only explanation I could think of for why.
For sure.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Because about the knee-jerk thing of Burlesque getting like tons of Razzie stuff.
Yeah.
It's not a great song.
No. I don't think there was a great song.
Well, it's definitely not "We Belong Together" from Toy Story 3. I swear to God, he wrote that in like 4 minutes. Could any of you tell that apart from any of Randy Newman's other songs?
Oh, absolutely.
I don't think people just thought it was the Mariah song.
Just about to say that when I see that title, all I can hear in my head is the Mariah song. So maybe that's what got it.
She should absolutely sing it on the telecast.
If anybody has to sing stupid songs on the Oscars, it should be Mariah.
Wait, was that aggressive?
It was. I'm sorry. I hate the song performances, especially in years where there are no good songs. Call me crazy.
First, the cinematography thing about the King's Speech, and now this. I don't know why you're so against me.
Every podcast needs a villain, and apparently I am ours.
You're like my Mila Kunis. I don't know why you're antagonizing me.
Joe, that means you're going to win Best Supporting Actor, because they always go for the villain.
Yes! Finally! True. Finally! I've been waiting too long. All my consider ads are finally paid.
Did you do any glammed up ads that you paid for yourself?
Except mine don't say consider. Mine just say think about it.
I think we have to hit the Inception button again. Yeah.
Yes.
Oh, now I do. Oh, there we go.
The dream is collapsing.
Do we have a wrap up question? Is there any nomination that everybody's especially, especially excited about? Because mine's a between Michelle Williams and Dogtooth.
I was going to say Dogtooth is certainly...
I'm excited. I haven't even seen Dogtooth, and I'm excited about it.
I haven't either. I feel guilt.
I know. It's on Netflix Instant right now. There's no excuse.
There is no excuse. It's pretty much available everywhere. Also available on Instant that I watched last weekend is Restrepo, and I was super excited that got the Best Documentary nomination.
Actually the one I think is best in the category.
Really? I loved Exit Through the Gift Shop. It's probably 1 and 1A for me, although I admit I haven't seen the other three yet. But those two are so good that...
Well, I've seen three of them, which is more than I usually do at this point.
Right.
And I like Restrepo best.
And Wasteland wins the audience award everywhere. Like, and
oh,
people,
really?
Yeah, I played the Chicago Film Festival, and they had to, like, book an extra date. And it kind of has that King speech, like, people love it.
So is that your pick to win?
I'm predicting that.
That pick's going to make you seem really smart if it comes through. Everybody in your Oscar party is just going to be like, what?
Yeah, because I think everybody's predicting Inside Job.
Yeah.
What do you seem really smart? My God.
don't you want to see Exit at the Gift Shop win just for the anarchic? I mean, because Roderick James never got to win Best Editing, and now we get Banksy to win Best Documentary.
Honestly, in terms of the ceremony, I think that'd be really anticlimactic because he's not going to show.
No.
Yeah.
Unless he sends somebody like Sasheen Littlefeather to accept
him. Yeah. And to wheel her out.
And I feel like that kind of stuff can so often seem obnoxious where it's just like, oh, we're expecting somebody to do something outrageous.
Yeah, but I don't think Banksy's worried about us feeling he's obnoxious.
True, yeah.
I wish he cared more about Hollywood because he could do something awesome like send Christopher Nolan to accept it for him.
It actually seems like something he could do. Like, he understands Hollywood well enough to, like, send somebody who, you know, you want but don't expect. Mm-hmm. I feel like James Franco should accept it. They seem kind of kin.
That's true. James Franco's a weirdo art guy.
Thanks for attending, and to the readers, thanks for listening.
It never doesn't make me laugh.
Oh, so
wait, do it again. Okay, I'm Nathaniel Rogers from The Film Experience. Thanks for listening.
I'm Nick Davis, rattling my metal cage in the basement at Nick's Flick Picks.
I'm Joe Reed, aka The Gruffalo.
Oh man, I have nothing that good. I'm Katie Rich. I write at Cinema Blend. I wish I was the Gruffalo.